This is an interview with Cheryl Cartwright. Cheryl will be speaking with me, Barry York, for the oral history program conducted by Old Parliament House. Cheryl was on the staff of Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser from January 1978 to June 1980, and she later worked in the Canberra Press Gallery as a journalist. She worked for Alexander Downer when he was Shadow Treasurer and through his brief period of leadership. In 1996, she worked for John Howard in his election campaign, and she was on the staff of two federal ministers, John Moore, for whom she worked as media advisor, and as chief of staff for Warren Truss. Now, on behalf of the director of Old Parliament House, I do want to thank you for being part of the program. Do you understand that the Commonwealth owns copyright in the interview material, but disclosure will be subject to any restrictions you impose in the form of consent?
Well, thank you for inviting me, and yes, I do understand.
And may we make a transcript of the recording, should we be in a position to make one eventually? We'd send a draft to you for correction.
There's no problem with that.
Yeah, thank you. The interview is taking place today, Wednesday the 2nd of September 2009, at Old Parliament House. And I'd like to begin with some background, please. Can you tell me about your family background and how you came to Canberra?
It was more of a fluke that I came to Canberra rather than anything else. My family wasn't particularly interested in politics any more than the next person in the street, so it wasn't a topic of conversation in our house. The reason I came to Canberra was when I was finally allowed to leave home. I wasn't allowed to leave when I was younger. I wasn't allowed to leave till I was 21. I didn't leave home. I left town and found a job in I came from Melbourne. I found a job in Canberra, and it looked interesting. I didn't know very much about politics at all, other than I was coming to Canberra. I was coming to an interview. After the first interview in Melbourne, I asked to come to Parliament House in Canberra to see the office. And one of the reasons for doing that was I'd never been on a plane in my life, and I wanted to see what that was like. I wasn't really sure that I'd get the job. Then, I ended up in Canberra working for the Prime Minister, never having been away from home before, with some pretty dynamic people, so it was a case of learning very quickly at the time.
Where were you from in Melbourne?
I was from Footscray in Melbourne, or a little suburb called Brooklyn, past Footscray.
Yes. And what did your parents do for a living?
My father was a clerk in a factory. My mother was a housewife. They didn't have aspirations for the children to go to university. They wanted us to get a trade of some kind. So that's why I ended up being a typist, a secretary, and eventually put myself through university after I'd finished work in the Fraser office.
And was it a big family you came from?
No, it's a very small family, very close. My brother and I are still very close.
So it's you and one brother, mm-hmm. I see, yes. What about education? Can you tell me briefly about the schooling you had?
Well, typical working class families, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on education, and again, that's something that I suspect by leaving home, I haven't actually thought about it a lot, but I suspect by leaving home and leaving town, I was exposed to the opportunities that were out there, and took it upon myself to, as I said, go back to university afterwards. But in the meantime, working as a secretary, I'd had quite a few different jobs as a secretary and had some interesting jobs. I found I could work in areas that I was interested in, like cars, and worked for General Motors Holden for a while. So I also knew that by the time I'd had enough of working as a secretary in the Prime Minister's office, there was nothing else that I was going to be interested in doing, so I'd better take myself back to school. And I went to university then. But it gave me tremendous opportunities by having worked in the Prime Minister's office, and there are people who I met at that time who I'm still friends with.
Now, you mentioned that your parents weren't pushing you with education, but what was your attitude to your formal schooling?
I loved maths and English. I used to get 100% for maths when at school, but my parents were concerned that I wasn't focused enough on... I was perhaps a little bit too assertive for their liking. I wasn't demure and quiet like a girl should be. So as far as the schooling went, I enjoyed school, but it wasn't fashionable in the western suburbs to let on that you liked school. So I enjoyed learning, but I did my best to hide that.
Which schools did you go to?
I went to North Altona High and a little primary school called Brooklyn West.
Was religion important at all in your family?
No, I went to Sunday school when I was a child, and I think once sort of sport took over on weekends and other things took over, I didn't go to church after that. But I did start going to church again around about when I was working for Malcolm Fraser. I had a little epiphany of sorts, and when I was about 22 or 23, I started going to church then.
And I must ask, when were you born?
I was born in 1956. 56,
okay. You mentioned sport. Was that your main recreational type activity?
Yes, I have to say I was very grateful that one of the things my parents did do, they took me to tennis lessons, and I have absolutely no talent for sport, but I have a lot of determination. And so through sheer determination, I became relatively good at tennis. And as I said, not through any particular skill. And I would have to every shot think, okay, turn side on, put the racket back. Nothing came naturally, but I played fairly senior level competition, which did provide an entry into Canberra social life. So I did meet people through the tennis club as well. And being fairly good at tennis, it meant people wanted to play with me. So there were some people who later on, when I worked in the press gallery and there were competitions there, people did like to play with a strong player. So that worked in my favour and opened a few doors as well.
Yes. When you were in Melbourne, did you have ambitions? Did you... You know how young people want to be something when they grow up. Was that your?
Didn't know I had that right to want to be something, because where I was raised, and people who are highly educated and grow up in an educated family, don't realise that not all children are raised with a view of what they might do in the future as far as a career goes. That doesn't mean to say that you don't grow up in a loving, wonderful family, but your horizons are really quite low. And all I knew was I didn't like being bored. I left my first job after three months. And my father was devastated to think that I would leave a job so soon. But I was bored, and I got another typing, secretarial type job in another company somewhere, and went through quite a few secretarial type jobs in that way at a time when, you have to think back, that's 30 odd years ago, at a time when it was natural for people to stay at their jobs for quite a while before leaving, whereas these days the younger generation tend to move on. So my ambition in life was to not be bored.
So it sounds to me like you had quite an active mind, like you were.
Oh, very much so, yes. And whenever I went to a job, I would always think, well, what would my next step be? And I didn't give up until I'd achieved that next step. And it happened in most of the jobs. I ended up as a young secretary getting to the senior ranks fairly quickly, and but also getting a little frustrated when I could see the answer to a problem that the person I was taking dictation from couldn't. And it was many years later that I realised it wasn't that they were stupid, it was just the fact that I'd never realised that I actually had a few brains. No one had ever told me.
Were you bookish at all as a
No,
child?
no. I guess there was just not an encouragement to be bookish in that sense. I certainly loved reading and still do, but I didn't. I never learnt to study. Even when I went back to uni, I never learnt to study. I just got by.
And when did you leave school? Did you do the HSC?
No. Or? No. I'm not quite sure why, but I decided to leave school as young as I possibly could. I got secretarial training and went straight into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant when I got back in, when up by the time I'd gone back to university as a mature age student at 24, by the time I came out and started journalism at 27, I was still fairly young.
Yes. You mentioned applying for the job in Canberra, and that you didn't leave home as such but moved on out of Melbourne. What prompted you to do that?
Adventure. I didn't want... It looked interesting, it looked exciting, and I'll take risks. I take risks. And I've left, you know, in my career, I've left jobs with nothing to go to. And things just happen if you want them to.
And the job you applied for in Canberra, was that the job with Fraser?
Yes, it was.
Okay. With
it
the
was.
Prime Minister's Department? Or
I didn't understand then, as most people outside politics don't understand, the difference between the political office and the bureaucracy. So when I applied for it, I wouldn't have known the difference between working in the bureaucracy and working up at physically at Parliament House. And I, being, you know, a child from the West, it never occurred to me that I would actually meet the Prime Minister. I just thought that if I worked really hard and did a great job, that maybe one day I would. Not realising that I walked into the office on the first day and it was all happening.
He was there, was he?
I have to admit, I don't exactly remember the first day because, as you can imagine, being brand new, first time away from home and starting a new job, a lot of those early days are a blur. But I do remember the principal private secretary then was Dale Budd, who's still around Canberra, and I still see Dale now from time to time. And one of the speech writers was Petro Georgiou, who's a federal member who is retiring at the next election. I remember them most, and the girls that I was working with in, there was a typing pool, there were four of us in the typing pool, and we had responsibility to the different speech writers. So I remember lots of different things from about that time, but not necessarily sequentially.
Were you very political or aware of political events at that? I'm thinking, say, 1975, you know, the dismissal. Did you have an attitude to those things? Or?
I remember having an attitude towards left of centre politics. It was a fairly ignorant view of left of centre politics, but I didn't like what Whitlam was doing, but I wasn't quite sure why. And I have vague recollections of the economy shouldn't be in debt.
Yes. Mm.
I have vague recollections of that, although it was never a conversation amongst my family or my friends, but I do recall that type of thought. And I also somehow naively equated the inability of General Motors Holden being a very big organisation and therefore very bureaucratic. I had applied for a promotion as a secretary. I wasn't able to get that job because somebody older had applied who was already at a senior level and they didn't have a facility that would allow somebody from a lower level to come up when someone at a senior level had applied. I equated that with bureaucracy, and I equated that with bureaucracy in Canberra as well. I suspect I was left of centre politically before I worked for Fraser, but those views were established while working for Fraser, although I have to say most of my friends are Labor-leaning, and I like to tease them because they're educated Labor and I'm the only working class person they know.
Had you been to Canberra before? Like, were you?
No, I'd never. I think the farthest north I'd been was to Bright in Victoria. And when I was 17, we went to Adelaide by car, towing a caravan.
How did your parents feel about you leaving Melbourne?
Devastated.
Mm.
They didn't want me to leave. My mother certainly didn't. I think my father was keen for me to have an adventure of sorts. But my mother certainly didn't want me to leave.
So you came to Canberra. You hadn't, obviously, hadn't been to Parliament House before. Or,
no.
What did you know about it?
I knew it existed. I knew that's where politicians were. And I was there to find out. It was just a whole new world. And as I've said, I've embraced whole new career changes a couple of times now, or quite a few times. And I do enjoy the challenge.
How did you come up from Melbourne?
I drove my little car.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I spent many years driving backwards and forwards between Melbourne and Canberra, long before it was a dual freeway.
And did they have accommodation arranged for you when you arrived here, or did you have to find
I have vague recollections of being put up in a motel for a while until I found somewhere to live. And once again, being first time away from home, I'd never even looked. I think I'd had a brief period out just before I came up here. But I rented a one-bedroom flat in somebody's backyard. I think I lasted about 4 months there and then went to a group house. And I remember asking my parents' permission to live in a group house, even though I was living in another town.
And can you tell me about the impressions of Canberra, your initial impressions? Very different to Footscray, I know that, being a Melbourne Brunswick boy myself. Mm-hmm.
Again, because it was all so new, it's very blurred. It's very blurred, and I eventually settled into having a nice lifestyle. I met some friends, because as I came here and didn't know anybody, I met some friends. They were these country girls. They were a tough bunch, and they took a shine to me and looked after me. And they'd take me out drinking, and they'd all drink beer. And it was my first, I think it was the first time I ever drank wine, and I'd drink whatever cask wine was going at the time. And working for Malcolm Fraser meant very long days and long nights. And when they had a night out and they were going to a pub, they would ring me each time they changed pubs to make sure I knew which one I was going to when I finally got away from work. And some of those girls have stayed in touch over the years, and they've been lovely. They've watched my career as I've gone back to university and become a journalist and now a manager type. They've been very generous and encouraging with the way things have gone.
Tell me, do you still feel an affinity with Footscray and Melbourne?
Footscray's very different now. It was starting to change about when I left. What has been useful as a political advisor is that connection with community and that understanding of the way people think. What political parties seem to have to do now is spend a fortune on consultancy that do surveys of people. And when I've worked for politicians and they've caught on with regard to the background, they would often say, well, what do you think, or what do you think your mother would think? And most of the time, it's a lot less expensive than the report that comes from the surveys,
yeah,
from the consultancies, which tell them exactly the same thing. So I think it's given me a good understanding of people. And it's also, I think, in my current role, because I started out as an office junior, touch wood, I shouldn't brag about this, but the juniors tend to like working for me, yeah, because I give them a lot of respect and I give them an opportunity to demonstrate they have ability. If they don't have ability, I'll work around it. But if they've got ability, I'll help them nurture it.
We should point out you're chief executive of the Australian Pipeline
Industry Association, which is the Gas Transmission Industry Association, yes.
Can we talk about the daily routine at work, working for Prime Minister Fraser? What would be a typical day? Is it possible to say there was no typical day.
Oh. As typical as you could get, if Parliament was sitting and question time was on, then it was just absolutely frenetic the whole time. You have to remember there were no computers in those days, and they relied on, you know, accurate typing, which you don't have to rely on now. The notes were done on, the paper would be roughly A5 sized paper for the notes for Mr. Fraser, but that, I don't think the metric size paper was in those days, but it's roughly the size. We used to use golf ball typewriters, and if I can brag for a moment, I was the only person who could type so fast that I would make a golf ball typewriter over type. So that's been really useful skill in my current job, just being able to get through things quickly. But in those days, it was useful for Mr. Fraser wanted his speeches typed, you know, in a hurry. He always wanted them changed, and I was often called on when they needed something done very quickly. Another typical thing would be we would often be called on to travel at short notice. Whenever the advisors travelled, of course they're all men, they'd take one or two of the girls with them, with the Prime Minister, and you were never quite sure who was going to go. And I'm not quite sure what was behind that or whether I was the one who was disorganised, but I always had a bag of clothes and toiletries at work ready to go for if ever I had to travel at short notice. I can still see the bag sitting under my desk.
You've mentioned typing the notes for Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other common tasks that you would do?
Working for pretty much mainly Petro Giorgio, I would do letters that he had dictated and speeches that he would dictate for the Prime Minister. That's really all I remember doing in the office. Running errands and that sort of thing. Just very much a typical secretarial type of job. But everything had, there was a lot more to do and a lot faster.
Mm. How many other staff were there?
In our little office, there were four of us who were secretary typists and one girl who was the switchboard operator receptionist. There wasn't a reception desk as such, but the phone was going constantly, so Margot was very busy, and we would have to answer the phones if she was busy. There was an office manager, a woman called Kathy Queely, who was an amazingly brilliant girl who Mr. Fraser had a lot of time for her, and she was one of the few secretaries who got promoted to a semi-administrative type of position. When she left, the person who came in and took over her was Malcolm Hazel, who eventually came back and worked in a not dissimilar but a little bit more senior role for John Howard when he was Prime Minister in the new building. And then just going up the the corridor, there would have been three or four advisors, speechwriters, a principal private secretary. He had, as I mentioned before, he brought one of his electorate staff to Canberra because he spent so much time in Canberra, it was very useful for him to have somebody in Canberra who was in touch with the electorate but knew how to manage electorate issues. She was not from the electorate, she was from Stan Collard's office, I think, but she knew how to manage electorate issues. And he had two diary secretaries, both called Kathy. And then around the corner from there was the departmental liaison officer. He had one of those. That was Peter Hand, who I believe went away but is back in Canberra now. And my second job in the office was secretary to that person, to the departmental liaison officer. And he was great to work for because he knew that I needed to do more than just type, and he often gave me admin things to do to help him out. So I was a bit of a right-hand person to him.
What was his name?
Peter Hand.
Peter Hand, oh yes. Now, we had a brief look at the office on the way in today. How had it changed?
It's certainly, it's quite different from when Malcolm Fraser was there, but not completely different. The layout of the general office, I guess it's allowing for people to walk through, but it doesn't have the desks the way they were, and there were also big filing cabinets in there as well. And down the corridor, where there is one office on the right that's relatively large, there was a wall there, and it was originally just a little alcove with just enough room for a couch. And when Ruth Murray started as the electorate officer, that was converted to an office. So the office was exactly as wide as the couch was, which was pretty much not much bigger than an IBM Golf Ball typewriter. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Fraser's desk was facing a different direction from the way the office is now. But for obvious reasons, the office has been left the way Prime Minister Hawke had it.
Yes. Perhaps at a later date we could film you in there describing the changes and make an audiovisual record too.
I can hardly say no now that you've got it on tape.
Ah, yes, that's right. That's my trick. were there other parts of the building that were part of your daily routine or that you regularly had to use?
Very occasionally, and it only came back to me as we were walking down to this part of the building, very occasionally I did have to run errands or visit other offices in the building. And certainly along that corridor, the broad corridor where the Prime Minister's office is, there were a couple of other ministerial offices. I can remember Tony Street was in one of them. I can remember going to Treasurer John Howard's office, but I don't have a clear recollection of where it was. It probably was the floor below the Prime Minister's office, but I'm not sure about that. Where I did go to a lot running errands was up to the Prime Minister's press office. And in those days, the Prime Minister's press office was actually located in the press gallery. And I think it would be very good for them if they did that now. He had three media advisors, and there were two or three secretary typists in there at the time. And I knew the way up to that press office, so I knew where the press gallery was, which was handy in later years when I went looking for a job in the press gallery. I knew where it was, even though I didn't know what I was looking for.
Yes. Did you go into the chambers at all?
No, I didn't. It wasn't my job at all. Prompted memories now. I would have gone to take notes to any of the advisors who were sitting in the chambers or by the chambers, but that's all. No.
Did you have access to the facilities, like the, well, you've already mentioned the tennis courts and the gardens and...
I didn't make the most of them, that's for sure. Certainly was, after coming back as a journalist, I spent more time on the tennis courts and in the bar, which doesn't look anything like it used to.
And what about areas that were out of bounds? Were there any such spaces that you were prohibited?
I didn't even think about going anywhere that wasn't involved with work. You don't. There wasn't a lot of downtime. So you came to work, you parked your car and you came to the office and just worked like crazy the whole time. One of the things I did remember coming here, though, parking out the front of Old Parliament House, there were some parks up the back, up the hill, but we would often just park our cars in the front of the car park because the fine was only $4.
When you were here and the job was going well, I take it that you were good at your work from what you're saying.
Well, that's my version anyway.
Did you think that Canberra was your future?
No. When I first came here, I thought, I'll come to Canberra for a couple of years and then I'll just go up to Sydney for a couple of years and then I'll go somewhere else. Once you've worked in politics and been involved in it, it's really hard to get it out of the system. It's a buzz. If you have a short attention span and if you enjoy stress, it's perfect.
You suggested earlier that actually working for Mr. Fraser influenced your outlook or your political views?
Well, especially having Petro Georgiou there. His background was similar to mine, but his father was a Greek immigrant who worked in a factory but sent Petro to university. And Petro had this lovely talent, this lovely knack of when he was... I can see what was happening now, but I just admired it at the time. If he was starting to lose an argument, he'd say something like, oh, I'm just a poor little Greek boy, you'll have to explain that again. And that was one of the techniques I used later on. I'm just a secretary, you'll have to explain that again. Many years later as a journalist I tried, I'm just a girl, you'll have to explain that again, and I got in trouble.
Yes, true. What were the ethnic backgrounds of your parents? I didn't ask that. Were they Australian born?
Very much, yeah. My paternal grandfather came from London and he was a postie, rode a push bike for the post office, the PMG it was called then, wasn't it? And he had five children on a very small salary, and all of the other relations were all English, Australian, way, way back, going back to English.
Now, we've talked about the IBM golf ball typewriter. I realise you were only with Mr. Fraser for 2.5 years, but were there any changes in office equipment, technologies in that time?
The only change was we got different golf balls for the typewriters and could use different font. That was rather exciting. But one of the things that was... a real challenge, and I think it might have contributed to a few people's health problems. When we travelled, we actually travelled with full-sized IBM golf ball typewriters, not the little travelling ones, which were heavy enough. In order for these typewriters to travel safely and not be broken on the flight, they were put in quite large, heavily padded steel casings, which needed two people to carry them. We also carried all of the paper with us. Now, this was the girls did all this. We would land wherever we were. We'd travel in the back 111, the old planes that the Prime Minister used to have, and the guys would all jump in the motorcade with the Prime Minister and take off. The girls would unload the planes, including these incredibly heavy cases with the incredibly heavy golf ball typewriters in them, and move it all to wherever we were setting up an office, and set up an office. Some of the girls were really organised and really good at setting these things up, but we would get to an office, there'd be two of us from the general office and one from the press office usually, and whatever hotel or motel we were in, within, I don't know, minutes, half an hour, I don't know, it's a long time ago, we would have a functioning office set up with, and that's when actually the travelling fax machine was invented. I remember using the very first fax machine, and we used to get covered in ink.
From the fax machine?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, especially the travelling one, because the travelling one you'd have to, it was an old barrel, and you'd have to, a long barrel, and you would thread the paper onto the barrel and it would rotate and the needle would read the writing on the paper and send it through the telephone lines. And we thought that was a marvellous invention.
Yeah. Now, still talking about the technology, when you started work in Melbourne in secretarial jobs, what was the typewriting like then?
They weren't electric typewriters. They were your old Remingtons and, there was another sort that was popular. Didn't start with electric typewriters, no, but eventually moved towards electric. But we didn't like them at first.
You didn't like the electrics
no.
at first?
No,
oh, okay.
No. They were prone to breaking down, too sensitive to touch.